I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, hey, it's Friday! Or this sounds even better. Hey, hey, it's Friday! It's also a payday for a lot of us. Depending on your schedule, we're on an alternating Friday schedule for paydays, and there's always a little more jolt, a little more juice when it's a payday. Although, you know, for a lot of us, rent and mortgages are due this weekend as well. So, you know, there goes the joy. I'm just kidding. I actually like paying my mortgage because it's a privilege and a blessing to me to own a house for the first time. So I usually am paying my mortgage early because I get all geeked up about it. I don't think the bank feels the same enthusiasm. I hope that you are ready for what is the last weekend in October. And it's not even a full weekend because Sunday is November 1st. I don't know how many of you have Halloween plans. I have none except to, well, I've got errands in the morning, but I have none except to turn off all my lights and avoid trying to give away my candy to little candy mongers who might stop at my door. I don't know. New Jersey is pretty locked down still. And so I don't know how many kiddos will be out. And since I just moved to this part of the neighborhood, I'm not sure how many will come knocking on my door. But I do have some candy in reserve just in case. Or maybe, do you think they'll love me and come back if I give them apples? Isn't that the meanest thing ever? It's like pushing the kid down and taking his lunch money to give him an apple in his bag. I mean, with all that candy you're eating, your teeth are going to rot unless you eat an apple, which is, of course, nature's toothbrush. Dave, you have 7 children or more. What do you think? Because I know you are taking your little boy to go trick-or-treating. Is he dressing up as well?
I have 9 kids now, by the way.
Nine.
Yes.
What are you, Philip Rivers?
Yeah, yeah, I'm almost there. Yes, he will be a T-Rex dinosaur.
Oh my gosh, please take pictures of your little baby T-Rex.
I'm sure my wife will take 8,000
pictures. Just tell me it's not purple like Barney.
It is most certainly not.
Oh, okay,
phew. He loves dinosaurs, so that's what we're going. He actually doesn't even know he's going to be a T-Rex yet.
Haven't told him because he's too excited?
We're going to open it tonight so he can put it on
so
for tomorrow.
Cute. All right, so if I was to give your little boy an apple, would that be mean?
I mean, he would probably love it, but but yes, on Halloween, we need some chocolate, we need some candy.
Right.
We don't want pennies and toothbrushes. And
well, pennies, that's...
I used to get little bags with some of the weird neighbors used to give out pennies.
Pennies?
Like little mini travel toothbrushes, weird stuff.
Interesting. I've never done the toothbrush, but that's really funny, too. I mean, I feel like if you don't want kids to come back to your door, apples and toothbrushes and pennies might be the... But I have a penny, and every time someone knocks on the door, my penny goes ballistic, which is another reason. She does not bark very often. She doesn't bark at all, actually, unless she thinks someone is knocking on the door. Sometimes I just knock on the table. Don't ask me why. I'll do it just to play with her, to screw with her, and she thinks it's a knock on the door, and she starts barking like crazy. So that's another reason why I don't love trick-or-treaters, is because the dog, every 5 seconds, and she's not fierce, but she has a fierce bark. So maybe that'll scare the kids away. Yay.
It
Do
might.
I sound like an ogre or what? I'm the Halloween ogre.
No, this year it's definitely socially acceptable to not answer the door on Halloween.
I actually heard the governor of New Jersey make this announcement. Your Halloween mask is not appropriate to cover your face. That does not qualify as wearing a mask. Okay, thank you for clarifying. So I hope you all have fun Halloween plans, but safe Halloween plans, of course. And I'm not going to preach at you because I know people are tired of getting preached to, but I do want you to be safe always. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in. Happy Friday. We're live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Do you need to know what it takes for a home loan to fit your budget and your family? Rocket can. We know for sure one guy who won't be trick-or-treating this weekend. He probably wasn't going to, but you never know. Might have come back from a big game on the football field and thought, hey, what the heck? I will dress up as Trevor Lawrence and I'll go trick-or-treating because he's pretty popular in the neighborhood. So Trevor Lawrence is actually in isolation and his college football future in the immediate is very much up in the air.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the biggest stories of the season. I was able to confirm through a source that Trevor Lawrence indeed has tested positive for COVID-19. Clemson is preparing backup DJ Uiagalelei to play him against Boston College. And I'm told that you mentioned the 10-day protocol. We don't know when exactly he tested positive, but that it's going to be right up against the Notre Dame game, whether he plays for that. Now, I would think a Trevor Lawrence could get ready if, let's say, you know, he tested positive on Tuesday and 10 days would be next Thursday or Friday, that, you know, you might want to go with him. You know, he can work out on his own. He has to be isolated up until then. But I think you could have him ready for Notre Dame. But it's a shock to the system. You know, this virus won't go away.
We know that Wisconsin's plans have been completely thrown into flux because of the Big Ten protocols. And so right now, they are not playing this weekend. Clemson will play unless something else happens between now and Saturday. But to this point, it's only Trevor Lawrence who has tested positive for the virus that we know of. You hear Dennis Dodd on CBS Sports HQ trying to do the math. So he will not play against Boston College. That was part of a statement by Coach Dabo Swinney. And Coach also said that he's experiencing just mild symptoms. Trevor himself later put a post on Twitter. He's experiencing very mild symptoms. And so he feels okay. He's mostly torn up about the fact that he can't be on the field with his guys. And so when you think about Boston College, maybe it's not as big a storyline. But Notre Dame looms a week from tomorrow, and Notre Dame is number 4 in the country. This could be a really critical game when it comes to, you know, the eye test and the college football playoff committee. And of course, Clemson not only right now is the best team in the country, but they have designs on winning another title before Lawrence might depart from the NFL. So all of that down the road in the future, but Dennis mentioned that if he tested positive on Tuesday, he would be able to rejoin the team in advance of the game against the Irish in South Bend. But the reports that I've heard indicate he tested positive on Wednesday. So if you're looking at Wednesday, then you're talking about it pretty close for comfort. Don't know if they would allow Trevor Lawrence to fly separately. Remember, this is still NCAA, meaning there can't be extra benefits for students. So I don't think they could charter some private plane to get him there. That really seems like it would be a violation of the rules. Don't know if he could. Could you imagine he flies commercial? Fly commercial separately? Maybe he drives there? I have no idea. I just know that if he's cleared, he'll play in that game. The logistics, that could be a little wonky. But right now, the most important thing is just mild symptoms. And he's not real sick, but of course frustrated. And so we'll see if there's any other further cases on the Clemson roster. But for now, he's definitely out for the weekend. It's crazy timing, right? In light of our 4-hour show last night, in which we kind of looked at all the different teams that would trade in their current quarterback or would take Trevor Lawrence on their roster right now. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in while we await the college football weekend. NFL Week 8 already underway. And it's kind of funny when you think about the Atlanta Falcons and what do you know them for? A quarterback who loves to throw the ball. In fact, has had 5,000 yard seasons in his career. A lot of times those yards get lost in a crappy defense, but Matt Ryan chucks the ball. That's what he does. And then you've got Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley and a bunch of other guys that they love to distribute the ball to, except their only 2 touchdowns last night, yeah, they weren't through the air.
Tight end left, single receiver over there. Here goes Gage in motion with leaving Jones to the right. Matt bails from the pocket to his right side. Now he's going to run with it. He'll step inside the five. Did he hit the pylon for the touchdown? Looks like he did, and he is. Matt Ryan in the end zone for the Atlanta touchdown on the 13-yard run.
First and goal from the three for Atlanta. Trying to make this a two-score game as we approach 11 minutes left. I formation again. Hand off to Gurley again. Gurley up the middle, and he is in. Touchdown, Atlanta. Todd Gurley, his first touchdown of the night, his eighth of the season.
So 10 rushing touchdowns for Matt Ryan in his career, 8 for Todd Gurley this season. They got one in the first half, one in the second half. Those are the only two touchdowns for the Atlanta Falcons, which meant the game was very much in doubt in those final couple minutes. So they're up by 8. They have a missed extra point, which means it's still a one-score game. And after Teddy Bridgewater returned from concussion protocol, so it was a shoulder-to-helmet hit by Charles Harris, Harris gets ejected in the third quarter. Bridgewater is out for roughly a quarter. Comes in again in the fourth quarter after he's been cleared, and the Panthers are driving. Not only are they driving, but they convert a 3rd and 17. And some friends of mine who follow the Falcons and cover the Falcons, including Brian Finneran, who's a former Falcons receiver, just like gifts and melodrama on social media. Everybody's all upset. A 3rd and 17. How do you get that up? Give that up? Oh my gosh, it's happening again. They're about to cough up another double-digit lead in the fourth quarter. Are you kidding me?
Here's the snap to Bridgewater. Moving left. Flag thrown. They put it up. It's intercepted. Taken away by Bleedy Ray Wilson at the 11-yard line. There is a flag down on the play, but Wilson likely has come up with his third career interception and his second of the year.
He absolutely did. Wes Durham on the Falcons radio network, and you heard Brandon Gowden there on the Westwood One radio network with the Gurley rushing touchdown. So with 57 seconds left, Bridgewater throws an interception, and even though the Falcons only have a couple of field goals, actually 4 field goals of their 6 trips inside the red zone, they only go 2 for 6 in the red zone, they managed to hold off the Panthers in this divisional battle. And Matt Ryan believes this could be the start of something for them. He believes that while they do have much to work on, that this could be a jumping off point. He actually said this could spark them for a second half surge.
When we get down there, we've got to come away with more touchdowns. I think we were maybe 2 of 6 for the night. Yeah. In the red area. So you'd like to be above 50%, you know, you'd like to be, you know, scoring more than 50% of the time you're down there. And that's definitely an area we want to address, but it's always nice to address those areas after a win.
It's always good to win, man. You know, I could never harp on losses in this league. You could always got to talk about when you win. You got to be able to enjoy those things however you get them. And tonight, it was a great fashion. It was a great finish. It was a 2-minute finish. It was some of the mistakes that was corrected from the year. I just feel like this team just jumped off the page tonight, was ready to play.
So 2 for 6 in the red zone, but 2 and 6 on the season. And since Raheem Morris took over for Dan Quinn, they've got 2 wins and 1 loss. So there is some reason for optimism. They score in the first 2 drives of the second half and then able to hold off the Panthers. As for Teddy Bridgewater, as for Matt Rhule, you try to find the silver linings. You try to look for the positives. And Rhule always comes back to how his guys play when they're out there.
As I told our guys, you know, I appreciate our guys' effort. I thought we played hard. I thought there were a lot of guys that were thrust into action that, stepped up. You know, there were guys that were, you know, playing on the punt team that were out there all of a sudden covering, and I give them a lot of credit. They went out there, they competed.
It's been a roller coaster ride for the Panthers in the first season with Matt Rhule. They win 3 in a row. They've lost a couple here, and these last 2 have been painful. In the span of a week, they've lost to 2 divisional opponents by 1 score. So they had some positives. Both Curtis Samuel touchdowns put them up 14-6, and Bridgewater looked good, like really fluid at times, except he was running for his life a bunch, and then the interception late in the game. They were only 2 for 10 on third down, and their defense wasn't able to contain the Falcons real well, though the Panthers actually had more yards rushing. They're waiting for Christian McCaffrey to return. He was not cleared in time for last night's game, so they anticipate having him back after the mini bye. And these two teams are, you know, they're going to battle back and forth, and I like that the Panthers do play hard for Matt Rhule. I think that you can see that he's got the right attitude, the right approach. And when Mick Mixon joined us in the first hour of the show, he had his wife's permission to stay up late to join us. I asked him at the end of our conversation, now that we're essentially halfway through the season, what are the bright spots, the silver linings for the Panthers cloud?
I'll tell you exactly. As a human being, to have a healthy life, you have to risk believing in someone else. And trust, unlike love, is not blind. It's earned through actions. And without trust, no relationship can prosper. If I had to say one word that has described the Matt Rhule coaching era at Carolina so far, it is trust. It's trust in the process. It's trust in the players trusting in their coaching. It's a belief that Matt Rhule has fostered in the third team versus the second team versus the first team that they're all listened to. They're all of value, and they're all going to play. And it's a trust that the fan base is building that this Panther team, even though it's young and it's growing, it's going to give everything they have to give every second of every game, every time out. And that's possible to love a team that doesn't win every week. If you feel like that team is selling out for you, I got chills. I just about got tears in my eyes right now trying to articulate this to you because it's been phenomenal to see the buy-in that Matt Rhule and his staff have achieved. Something special is brewing in the Carolinas, and it may take a year or two, but there's going to be a F5 funnel cloud raking over the NFC South here in a few years. And just remember that your staff meteorologist, your humble correspondent, your friend Mick, told you all about it on the Amy Lawrence Show.
Now, see, if you're looking for a ray of hope there, Panthers fans, you got it from Mick Mixon. Great conversation with him. We talked about the rivalries in the NFC South. He had some choice words for the Atlanta Falcons, but also about where this defense is and a lot of the rookies in the backfield, defensive backfield, but also, you know, hard on them as well and what he saw from them to start out week number 8. So check that out on our podcast, afterhoursamylawrence.com. But we always appreciate Mick. He brings a lot of fun, humor to the show, and certainly some emotion. How about that? Almost tears in his eyes. He's bought in as well. They're cooking something special in the Carolinas, as he said. All right, we've got this whole idea. It's really stuck in our craw here at After Hours that there are multiple teams facing must wins. Laugh if you must, but must wins in week number 8. I've given you 3 teams from the AFC, 3 teams from the NFC who are facing must wins. Who do you think is staring at a must win game this weekend? On Twitter, A-Law Radio, plus we've got our poll up, all divisional matchups. Which one are you most geeked up about? And then our Facebook page is, well, it's rocking per the usual. Happy Friday!
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast. This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Week 8, I can't say it enough. Maybe if I keep saying it, it's like Clayton Kershaw. He keeps saying World Series champs, World Series champs. It'll be real. I'm going to keep saying week 8 until it's actually here on Sunday, and then maybe it'll feel a little more real. I mean, think about it. Pretty soon we'll be doing storylines about the halfway mark, right? I know it's coming. Sunday, the NFL on CBS features a matchup of 2 elite teams fighting for division supremacy. In fact, the winner will be in first place in the AFC North, the Steelers in Baltimore, 25th all-time meeting between Mike Tomlin and John Harbaugh sets a regular season record for the Super Bowl era. Pretty amazing, the history and the tradition between these two teams, but also these two coaches. We also have a key AFC East showdown between the Bills and Patriots. Join JB and the guys. They get you set for all of the day's action on the NFL today, starting at noon Eastern. That's 9 a.m. Pacific Sunday. The NFL is on CBS. So I've given you a few of my must wins, and I'll go over them again following the update as we get through the last half hour of the show. But 3 from the AFC, 3 from the NFC. Where do you see a team sitting in a must win position? On Twitter, A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. But a quick baseball detour, if you don't mind, a diamond detour, if you will. You may have heard this by now, but it's worth repeating. AJ Hinch is about to come out of solitary confinement. He is the favorite to be hired as the Tigers manager. In fact, according to reports, they are finalizing a deal. And so Hinch, who essentially took the brunt of the Astros sign-stealing schemes, he found himself in a proverbial trash can for a year. He is now about to resurface in the Motor City. And of course, he will make an immediate impact. There's still some talk that the Tigers could go with Alex Cora, who is also tied to the Astros in that 2017 mess. But right now, it looks like Hinch is the front runner for the job. And I look forward to seeing him back in a dugout, back wearing a uniform again. I feel like he and Cora got off pretty light. They didn't have to sit through or be suspended through anywhere close to a full season. But no doubt it was painful for Hinch and maybe even Cora too, to watch the postseason and to kind of know what they're missing and to wonder how things might have been different. We also have a hiring in Chicago, and Hinch interviewed for the White Sox job as well, but it ends up going to Tony La Russa at 76 years old. He is back on the field.
I am really excited to be here today. I know enough people are asking why. During the last bunch of years that I've been upstairs, whether it be for MLB or the D-backs, Angels, or Red Sox, it was a wonderful opportunity to stay close to the game, watch the game from upstairs. It was very difficult, increasingly so, to sit there and think about what's going on downstairs. You know, when you're an advisor, it's something I enjoyed, but I always had this thought, man, it's more fun it's more fun downstairs.
I love that. At 76 years old, he still has a zest and an itch for managing. And it actually was painful for him to be upstairs, as he refers to the front office, maybe upstairs in a suite watching games as opposed to being down in the dugout. And so at 76 years old, he returns to a franchise that fired him more than three decades ago. How about that? So the White Sox fired him 34 years ago. And, you know, he's already a Hall of Famer. He's already won three World Series titles, two of those most recently with the Cardinals, but also with the A's. This guy's got nothing left to prove. He's doing this because he loves the game and because he feels like he still has more to give. And the team is ready and waiting for him.
I think all managers would understand this. I think everybody would understand this. How rare it is to get an opportunity to manage a team that's this talented and this close to winning.
He becomes the oldest manager in the majors by 5 years, actually. So he's got Dusty Baker beat by 5 years. But this is a White Sox team that has some young stars. We saw a limited sample size because of the 2020 season, but really veterans as well. Now, they were a team that made the playoffs for the first time since 2008. They got knocked out in that new fangled wild card round, but the playoff drought at least is ended. And here comes La Russa, who brings a wealth of wisdom and experience, though in light of the debate over analytics versus gut instinct and maybe new school versus old school, I've always seen La Russa as old school, but he says he's going to introduce a new side of himself.
Questions that's asked most often is the wealth of information that helps you prepare, and I embrace it. I know our coaching staff will. I think people that watched our clubs the years that I managed know that we were always information seekers.
Do you think he did everything he could to avoid using the word analytics? Information seekers. I have no problem with it being a tool to help shape your decisions. But if there's anyone in Major League Baseball, heck, if there's anyone in sports who should be able to use his gut and his instincts and his experience and the wealth of knowledge that he has, it should be Tony La Russa. Isn't that why you hire a guy like Tony La Russa? Because of everything he brings to the table, because of everything he's seen, everything he's watched, all the adversity he's faced, the titles he's won, of course. If you're hiring a La Russa for analytics, that's to me, not a match made in heaven. This guy brings passion, but it's also about being able to establish not just a winning culture, but moving this team forward into a new space, getting them over the hump, so to speak. I don't know if they hit a glass ceiling with Renteria, but with La Russa, you feel like you've got the right voice, the right leadership to bust through that glass ceiling and make yourself a contender in the American League. So sure, information is what he calls it, can be a tool. But if there's anybody who I would trust to go with his instincts and a feel and understanding what he's got in front of him on the baseball diamond as opposed to in a computer or in a laptop somewhere, it would be Tony La Russa. So this will be fun. He was 34 when he got his first major league managing job. Now he is 76. Okay, he might need to be a Hall of Famer again. All right, back to the NFL when we get through our update in the break here at the bottom of the hour, asking you which teams face a must win in the NFL this weekend. And I will thank Cam Newton for this idea. On Twitter, A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page, your poll is up. As usual, you're feisty on a Friday. It's a football free-for-all.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Myers on the outside, two to the left, Bird in the slot. Bird
Kent
along the near sideline. Newton extending the hands, looks to his right, takes the snap. Cam drops back, looks down the middle. He throws it off Edelman's hand, careens in the air, picked off. Running it back across the 30-yard line. Jamar Taylor with the interception. And he is brought down in the play. It was a high throw behind Edelman, who reached up with his left hand. No chance to make the play.
Edelman was wide open 2 seconds prior. He was wide open, and he waited. And I don't know what he's looking at.
In San Francisco. Gets it back with a 30-6 lead. Meanwhile, off the sideline for the Patriots, in comes number 4 in the blue jersey, Jarrett Stidham.
Quarter too late.
Came on in place of Brian Hoyer in a competitive game a couple of weeks ago versus Kansas City. Now takes over for Cam Newton in this lopsided affair.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Oh, yeah, I'm definitely enjoying Scott Zolak's pain. Oh, my goodness. Poor Bob Sosie. He can't get a word in edgewise. But you know what? The Patriots have had it really good for 20 years, and there's been a lot to gloat about. Now there's a little more of the adversity to face on the Patriots radio network. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in. Cam Newton, he has already labeled this. There is a major sense of urgency as the Patriots get to Western New York this weekend.
This is a must-win for us. And I'm going to control the things that I can control. And, you know, I have 2 or 3 more days to prepare. And that's what I plan on doing.
Cam Newton has called this a must-win game against Buffalo. And I would agree with him. Patriots are at 2-4. This is kind of a no-brainer if they want to hold on to the AFC East title. And if they want to find some kind of rhythm. They've gone weeks with only a couple of practices. Their quarterback was out. They had, obviously, many defections on the defensive side of the ball. If you think about it, now with only 6 games in, they should be able to find some consistency, except they went a couple weeks without practice. So it's not hard to figure out why the Patriots are struggling. Cam Newton is just barely into the system in a handful of games, and he also had his time with the team and the offense interrupted. Now, the turnovers are the number one obstacle for the Patriots at this point. They are -2 in turnover differential. They have a dozen takeaways, but they have 14 giveaways. At this point, they've already had 14 turnovers, and that's 11 total interceptions, 3 fumbles. If you look at Cam's number specifically, he has 7 interceptions. And then they've also had a dash of Brian Hoyer and a dose of Jarrett Stidham. So it's just been a mess all around. But I don't think it's difficult to figure out why the Patriots have been so bad. For the Bills, I also think this is a must-win game. Hear me out. They want that AFC East title. It's a stated goal of theirs. In order to get to that goal, they've got to go through the Patriots. Like it or not, They've had that division locked up for over a decade. If you want what they've got, you got to go through them to get it. And this is the game that's at your house. You don't play them again until second to last weekend of the year, and that one's at Gillette. This is the one that's in your house. If you want to win the AFC East, this is the game where you got to do it. Now, does it mean the race is over? No. But this is a huge game for the Bills. Patriots are their nemesis. Patriots have had their number. This is a different Patriots for sure, but don't tell me there isn't something different about this game, Josh Allen. I don't believe you for a second when you tell me blah, 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 blah.
It's the most important game because it's the next one. That's the mindset we have every time we play. So we're not trying to make it a bigger deal or a smaller deal than what it needs to be. You know, we got to win. You know, our goal is to win every game we play. You know, we're not going out there to lose. So, well, like I said, we're focusing on this week and trying to have a really good week of practice and put in a really good game plan and go out there and try to execute it on Sunday.
It's a must win for both teams. The Bills have a brutal schedule coming up. They have to play the NFC West still, most of those teams. And this one at home against the Patriots is critical if they want to win that division. And I would agree it's a must win for New England. So those are two of my AFC teams that I would put in the must win category. I think there is one more in the AFC. Hear me out. I believe that the Colts also face a must win. Yes, the Titans are coming off their first loss, but the Titans have the Bengals this weekend. And if they play the way that they're capable of, that should be a win. We know anything can happen. But for Tennessee, they've still got the leg up in the AFC South. The Colts this weekend are on the road as well at Detroit. They got to take care of their business. I feel like the Lions are roaring. They're flying high. They're kings of the jungle for a week anyway. And so this is where the Colts have got to keep pace with the Titans. You don't want to fall further behind in that AFC South. In the NFC, it's a must win for the Niners because they are basement of the NFC West. I know that they're only separated by two games with Seattle. Actually, Seattle's only played six. The rest of the division has played seven games. But the Niners have got to start picking off these division opponents if they want to get back to the top of the West. They were 13-3 a year ago, the defending NFC champs. They've had a lot of losses to injuries. Every team has, including Seattle on the defensive side of the ball. This one is huge on the road in Seattle, and of course it'll be different because there won't be a 12th man that is screaming its lungs out at Jimmy Garoppolo in the offense.
I'll miss the atmosphere up there. It's one of the cooler places to play, just with the fans and everything. But yeah, definitely with the cadence, the procedure and all that stuff, it'll definitely make it easier for us. So looking forward to that.
Easier, probably not a word I would use when you're on the road in a division game against a team that you need to beat in order to start making up some ground in that race. So I put the Niners in the must-win category, and I also put the Bears there. We talked about this a little bit earlier, producer Dave weighing in. We agree on this one, not so much because the Bears' record is brutal. It's not like the Patriots' record, but they have just come off that loss to the Rams, and because they are now looking up at the Green Bay Packers, and because the Bears offense has been so bad, they've got to find a run game. They can't keep counting on their defense to win every game for them. And the top of the NFC is loaded, which means they can't afford to give up any ground. Eagles too. I know it's the NFC East, but they've got to continue some momentum here. Did they play last Thursday night? That's when we saw them last, right, against the Giants. They're coming off this mini bye, and someone's got to win this division. And I feel like rather than backing into it, you want to grab it. You want to take it. This is where the Eagles really need to step up. They've got young guys who are learning on the job, learning on the fly. I still think Carson Wentz is the man for the gig. He's fearless. He's a good leader. They just need to use the experience they've got in that locker room and start to put some wins together. So as we hurdle our way toward the midway point of the NFL season, which teams do you think are staring at must wins? I've got Patriots, Bills, Colts, Niners, Bears, Eagles. And so I'd love to hear from you on Twitter. Our show Twitter is After Hours CBS. We've got our poll up and then also on our Facebook page. Some really good answers on Facebook, so I'll get to those here momentarily. Jeff is listening in Pittsburgh. Welcome to After Hours.
Good morning, Amy.
Morning.
I apologize. Just woke up a little bit ago, but.
Oh, I'm so jealous. So when it comes to Pittsburgh and Baltimore, I don't see either one of those sitting in a must-win situation. To me, that's it's more about the supremacy and flexing your muscles, and maybe it has implications down the road, but both those teams are in a pretty good spot. Let's not take all kinds of crazy liberties with the must-win. Even though technically none of these teams really face a must-win yet. But some of your answers on Facebook have been fantastic. Aaron says the Browns game every week is a must win for them. and so I understand the sense of urgency if you're a fan of a team who's been through the ringer like that. Let's see. Keith believes Steelers game is a must win. I don't think so. But he's... maybe he's thinking that they can't afford to give up any ground to the Ravens. And I hope that it's a battle all the way through the end of the regular season. Mark says, I think the two must-win games are the Niners and the team from Illinois. If they are real contenders, he won't say Da Bears. He's a Packers fan. Ron, must-win for the Patriots. I don't think Belichick is giving up on the season yet. Come on. How can you even write that with a straight face? What about Coach Bill, as Cam Newton calls him, tells you that he might be giving up on the season at any point? Some guy actually called me earlier and asked me, as a conspiracy theory, do I believe the Bills might allow the Jets to beat, no, I'm sorry, the Patriots might allow the Jets to beat them so that the Jets don't get Trevor Lawrence? What? No!
No days off!
No days off, and no team, especially not a Patriots team, is thinking about tanking or worrying about whether or not Trevor Lawrence ends up in their division. Stop it. Have you guys learned nothing at all about Bill Belichick in 20 years? Are you kidding me right now? Stop it. No, Bill Belichick is not giving up on the season yet. Not now, not ever. David on Facebook, Patriots, if they have any chance to upright their season, he believes they're facing a must win. Let's see. Fabio also says New England, lots of you pointing to the Patriots. Mark says the Raiders must beat the Browns to stay in the playoff picture. So he's talking about the AFC. And I suppose the Browns would like to keep some momentum going here, especially when they know they already face an uphill climb against the top two teams in the North. Let's see. Brad on Facebook, definitely the Colts. By giving away their opener versus Jacksonville, their second half schedule gets real. Oh, now it gets real. I got you. Did you see the story about Gardner Minshew? This is a bit of a surprise, but x-rays that he had this week showed that he has multiple fractures and a strained ligament in his right thumb. Multiple breaks in his thumb. Ow. I mean, I know there's more than just one bone in there, but yowzers. I wonder if it's pointing the wrong direction. Ever seen some of these athletes like grizzled, especially in basketball, after you've had multiple either fingers broken or jammed? That was the worst, the jammed fingers. It felt like every single game I would get another one of those jammed fingers. But anyway, he's been experiencing some pain in his thumb going back to mid-October, but he didn't tell the team. Oh, that's a great idea. Is he worried about losing his job if he has a sore thumb? Anyway, they did a post-game x-ray in L.A., and so the Jags didn't even know about his injury until this week. And even though they have a bye, that's still a major story there. His backup is Mike Glennon, the opposite of Gardner Minshew. That's really...
That is weird.
All you need to know. Interesting, right? A second-year player who keeps this information from the team. That's not the way that you build trust. So I thought that was kind of interesting to see. And while we're talking about quarterbacks, Ben DiNucci, we don't know if he's starting yet against the Eagles, but it certainly does seem like that's the way the Cowboys are preparing. And Dak Prescott has offered him some advice. So obviously we know Prescott is out for the year, but it doesn't mean he can't be a leader. And so he said... you know, that this is a opportunity of a lifetime, you know, kind of take it and grab a hold of it. And also said to him, you'll be great. Don't overthink it. Football is football. Now this goes back to even before he got hurt, but just kind of like encouraging him, even though at this point no idea that DiNucci would see the field. I think that's awesome that you would have a leader who, as much as he's got on his plate now, trying to heal up, you know, probably feeling terrible about how the Cowboys are playing, and the fact that he's not going to be part of it. I mean, there is a tie between DiNucci and Dak, right? Because DiNucci would be the first rookie to start since Dak in 2016 when he was thrust into that job with yet another injury because Tony Romo couldn't stop breaking back muscles. Felt like, not, I'm sorry, breaking back bones. What is wrong with me? I'm not fasting. I'm done fasting. I'm not even eating my apple right now. It's just sitting here. But apparently it's the end of the week and I just need to, zip it. Let's see. The NFL weekend, I think when we get to this point, teams are supposed to look more consistent. But in this particular year where you've had multiple teams who've had to break for practices, they can't get together because of COVID or they've had to shut down their facilities for a couple days at a time. Things are still, they're kind of wonky. They're kind of different. But I do think that the best teams now, you're going to start to see them rise to the top, the cream rising to the top. And so this week is big. There's so many divisional matchups, and I'm really excited to find out how these teams start to separate themselves. And one major way that you do it is to get to the top of your division. And that means division battles. You got to go through all of these teams in your division that hate you so much to get to the top. Got to face your greatest fear, Buffalo Bills. Steve says winning is contagious. Watch out for the Lions. He also wants to know if the Packers are a good survivor option versus the Vikings. I'm not touching that one. Talk to you Sunday night. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. Boom!
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. Audacy. Download it today.